This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The folk ballads of Appalachia are known around the world, and that is in large part due to a man called Cecil Sharp. A little over 100 years ago, the British song collector traveled to Appalachia to explore the region's folk traditions. He walked around the mountains, knocked on people's doors, and listened to them play songs that had been in their families for generations. Cecil Sharp documented hundreds of ballads that would eventually influence a folk song revival in England and the U.S. Along his journey, he also took intimate photographs of the people he met. A collection of those photos is now on display for the first time in the U.S. The exhibit opened at Through This Lens Gallery in Durham. It'll be there through February 11th. And joining me now is Donald Hughes, the project coordinator for the Cecil Sharp in Appalachia Centennial. Welcome, Donald.
Pleasure.
Good to have you here. And Joe Penland is with us as well, a folk musician from Marshall, North Carolina, here to sing some of the folk ballads from Sharp's collection. Welcome to you, Joe. Good to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Donald, let's talk about this, about Cecil Sharp and sort of when he toured Appalachia and what got him going on this project.
Well, in 1906 to 1911, he was touring west of England, a lot around Somerset, looking for the elusive ballad. He felt like the ballads were going away, and he was finding them, but they, mostly old people were singing. And he made a project of collecting that, and also country dance and Morris dancing, and trying to initiate, like you said, the folk revival in England. He came to the U.S. at the start of World War I, as there was no work in England for an artist-related, music-related person. And he got a gig choreographing A Midsummer Night's Dream. He made some connections with people in the cities in the United States, New York, Boston. He met someone named Helen Starrow in Boston, and she was associated with a woman we know here in North Carolina, Olive Campbell. Olive Campbell started the Campbell Folk School. And Olive had been traveling with her husband, John Campbell, who was in the Appalachian region working for the Russell Sage Foundation, doing betterment work, for lack of a better term, education, trying to bring resources to the Appalachian region. Olive was hearing music. Olive was writing down songs. She came to Boston to see Miss Starrow and presented to Cecil Sharp, who was visiting, a collection of these songs that she had found. And he was silent and then amazed. So Helen Starrow funded his travels in 1916, 17, and 18 to come back to the Appalachians for a total of 49 weeks, travel through five states, and really walk around, walk up to people's houses. I mean, this is not without some connection people were giving him, go here, go there. But he'd show up and say, do you sing the old songs? And, of course, they're known now as the love songs, and they're also gruesome, a lot of them. But it's the music that came, he felt, well, he was looking for the music that came from England, the English ballad. He wasn't looking for other music, and he found it.
He found it, and he was an accomplished musician and composer. Decades later, particularly through the Depression, there would be an effort to collect this music on tape, and we know about that. But the fact that he was a musician and a composer allowed him to actually transcribe this music, and that was important, right?
That's correct. He was writing notation. And, of course, you can't forget that he was traveling with Maud Karpeles, and Maud Karpeles was his associate from the English Folk Dance Society, which then became the English Folk Dance and Song Society. And they're our co-sponsors with this project. So he was writing the music down from ear, and she was writing the lyrics in shorthand. At night, she'd go home and type them up, and he'd rewrite his stuff. So we have these great notes. Also, he was keeping a diary. So we have those photographs with the music notation, the lyrics, where they were taken, who these people were, and his diary reference. So it's a wonderful collection that way.
Tell us more about this, the photographs he took, too, and kind of how that project began and how important the photographs are.
Well, I think he did it as a personal thing to remember and to send photographs back to people. He wasn't a traveling photographer just documenting the region like others had done. This is a real personal involvement. He stayed with these people. He'd have meals with them. He would go back to them. He sent them books and photographs. And this was a turning point for him because it was also so much personal involvement.
Yeah.
And that was exciting for them.
Well, Joe Penland, I'd like to get you to play some music. But first, let me ask you what you think the influence of Cecil Sharp's collection, how that influences music today.
Well, I can tell you how it influenced me, Frank, particularly. Sharp collected in Madison County, my home, over 250 ballads from people. I grew up in the 60s and learning songs by knee-to-knee method, but from people on front porches. But I learned maybe 40 or at the most 50 of these songs. So there's, you know, there's 200 songs that I had not heard. But I had heard songs by the same singers. So to take the songs that I knew and then take the documentation that Sharp made allowed me to feel in my head that I could hear Mary Sands singing this song. And so then I've increased my repertoire and also my relationship with these people who are long dead.
Will you play a song for us now? Maybe tell us a little bit about it.
I'll sing one for you. This is my favorite song. In the old days, the people who had a favorite song called it their songs, and there's been quite a bit of litigation about who wrote what or whatever, but this song came over a long time ago, and it's a song of leaving. It was sung by Miss Mary Sands, who sang for Cecil Sharp in 1 week of August. She was 8.5 months pregnant with her 10th child, 45 years old, and she walked 4.5 miles to sing a song for him. But she sang this on April 5th. It's called Pretty Sarrow. When I first come to this country in 1649, I saw many fair lovers, but I never saw mine. I view it all around me, and I found I was quite alone. And me a poor stranger, and a long way from my home. It's not this long journey that I'm dreading to go, or the country I am leaving for the debts that I owe. Oh, nothing so grieves me or troubles my mind as leaving my darling Pretty Sarrow behind. It's my true love, she won't have me, and this I understand. She wants a freeholder, and I have no land. Oh, if I could maintain her on silver and gold, I'd buy her all of those fine things that my love's house could hold. It's I wish I was a poet and could write some fine hand. I'd send my love a letter that she might understand. I'd send it by the islands where the waters o'erflow. I dream of my Sarrow wherever I go. It's I wish I was a turtle dove and had wings and could fly straight away to my love's lodging. This night I'd draw nigh, and in her lily white arms all night I would lay, and I'd watch those little windows for the dawning of the day. It's I've strolled o'er these mountains, and I've strolled o'er the plain. I strove to forget her, but it was all in vain. On the banks of the Ocoee, on the Mount of Sabrow, I once loved her dearly, and I don't hate her now. Pretty Sarrow.
Joe Penland singing Pretty Sarrow. He is one of the songs that Cecil Sharp documented during his time in Appalachia 100 years ago. He is with me along with Donald Hughes talking about an exhibit of Cecil Sharp's Appalachian photographs on display at Through This Lens Gallery in Durham. But Joe, let me ask you about something you said earlier. I mean, obviously the importance of Cecil Sharp documenting and recording on paper, right, transcribing these songs so that you could read them. But you talked about the knee-to-knee front porch. I mean, how would the transmission of this music have gone if there wasn't some personal kind of communication going on, learning songs from people older than you?
Well, I regret that other people are having to learn songs from, as they say, ear to CD now. That's what the young people are saying.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more that's transmitted when you, with a person in an isolated place. And even though all the singers that I learned from, except for one, could read and write, they insisted that you not write down the lyrics. Mm. So you would sit on the porch with this very patient older person. Lee Wallen was the first one with me. And you would sit facing each other, and he would sing a verse of a ballad. Then your duty was to repeat that. Then he would sing the second verse, and you would sing the first and second. Mm-hmm. He would sing the third. You'd try to do 1, 2, and 3, up to 49. But rarely could you do
you
that
wouldn't
in one
do that
sitting.
One sitting, right? No. Well, so, but Donald Hughes, that said, obviously there's a lot of nuance that would gets lost in a lack of personal, but the contribution that Cecil Sharp did make to music and to preserving folk culture in doing what he did, both these photographs and the music, talk about the value of what he did.
Well, he documented it, and he followed his idea that it still existed, that people will, it was a live thing. People were singing these songs, and that's what he was finding. But then he went back. They kept these accurate records. He and Maude Karpeles went back. He passed in 1924. Maude Karpeles ended up publishing two books. Sharp was quite a publisher. He was quite a businessman. He was trying to make his way in the United States, and he did publish other things, other books. He also started organizations, which helped to move this forward. The English Folk Dance and Song Society, he was the founder of. Maude actually worked for the society, and then he brought her over from England to America. In 1916, he founded the American branch, which now is alive and well as the Country Dance and Song Society, and I'm on the governing board of that group. That's how I got involved in this.
Yes.
We recently had his centennial of the founding, rather, and but then this is a further massaging of the facts and the history that he actually preserved this music in Appalachia, and we think it's really important to our cultures here in the region, and we hope around the country.
That is the way we think about it now, as a kind of historical and cultural contribution. But you mentioned that he was a businessman. How good a business was it, and what kind of popular interest, or who was interested in this stuff when he was walking through the mountains?
Well, a story I like to tell is he went off after college to Australia and got a job with the Chief Justice of the Australian Court, and he did that quite a while. But he, I suppose, wrote a letter to his dad, said, "Dad, I'm quitting this and I'm taking up music." And so he did that, taught music, and came back with some expertise.
I mean, he loved music, clearly, and he wanted to preserve this tradition.
Yes.
And I think you said earlier he saw it dying out because in England, where he was born, it was mostly older folks.
Right.
And then he hears that, wow, this tradition is still being passed on in Appalachia. So clearly he cared. But I wondered if there was any kind of a market for it. Who was paying him, and could he sell this stuff?
Helen Stora was providing the funds for him, and really there wasn't a market. He was making a living lecturing about this, about English tradition and dance tradition. He was doing some teaching. It was thin. It was very thin. He was staying in hotels, traveling by train around the country, sending some money when he could back home, trying to make publishing and recording deals. But it was thin. It was. I wouldn't say there's anything like a market.
The music alone is a marvelous contribution to us all who care about these kind of things. But what do the photographs add to this and what we know?
A personal depth, a story. You look in the eyes of these people, and then we know something about them. We know what they observe. We know where they were, dates and places. And they're not just a random picture of a person, a random old story. There's really something there, and that he knew them and he lived with them.
And clearly he had a good reception all the way through, although there was a moment in which he was suspected of perhaps espionage, right?
Yeah, they thought that he and Maude were German spies. In Hot Springs, during the war...
World War One, we're talking about.
Right, World War One, right. The hotel in Hot Springs was housing German prisoners of war. So there was a German kind of question running around. But they were, people were suspicious. Also, people who were very religious turned them away. They didn't get it to everybody.
Well, I want to thank you for being here, Joe Penland. I'm going to ask you maybe to sing or play us out. I don't know if you're going to pick up your guitar for this one, but before I do that, I'm going to just tell everybody that my guests are Donald Hughes and Joe Penland. Donald is the project coordinator for the Cecil Sharp Appalachian Centennial. Joe is a musician who has played some of the music from Sharp's collection. The photo exhibit, Cecil Sharp in Appalachia, is on display at Through This Lens Gallery in Durham, and that'll be there to February 11th. And we've got more information at our website, stateofthings.org, a program that is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton-Ormond, and Laura Pelliser. Robin Copley's our technical director. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio. Joe Penland, what do you got for us?
Well, I was going to play something out, but I thought I might give you an example of one of the songs that was rare for Mr. Sharp to collect, and it was collected from Mr. Tom Rice. Many of these singers were provided for Sharp through Presbyterian missionaries, and they were usually on their best behavior. So some of the songs that had more, in today's terms, very mild PG lyrics were not heard, but Mr. Rice seemed to think that it was a thing that he should do for him. And, of course, a lot of the songs revolved around soldiers or people, you know, the poor people sang these songs, trying to make their fortune or move up in the world. And this is called A Soldier Traveling from the North. A soldier traveling from the north, as the moon shone bright and gaily, the lady knew the gentleman's horse because she loved him dearly. She took his horse by the bridle rein and led it to the stable. Here's hay and oats for your horse, my love. Come feed him, you are able. She took him by his...